Hello and welcome to the Wardens of the Midwest podcast. I'm Joe from Cincinnati.
I'm Mickey.
I'm John.
I am Timmit, son of Timmit.
I am Mike.
So,
we still exist.
Yeah, we still exist.
It has been a while.
You know, me and Danny did a couple episodes, one I think with John.
Just
and
one.
It was just one?
It was just one.
Okay, well, it felt
like
more.
Did it feel
like
a couple?
Yeah, it felt like a couple. So yeah, we did one episode with John and you guys were gone, but you're back.
I am back. It's post-Gen Con. We're getting ready for Worlds, kind of. I mean, you know. That's
you're going to Worlds?
Really going yeah. to Worlds?
We're not going to Worlds.
I want to go to Worlds. Well, does no one else want to go to Worlds?
I decided that I'm not going.
You're not going?
No.
Really?
Worlds is always amazing. It's Minnesota in November. Who wouldn't
yeah,
love
Minnesota
that?
Yeah, Minnesota in the snow.
Yeah.
Everyone likes that.
But it's cheap. It has nothing on Gen Con. You know, a hotel's like $60 bucks a night.
I decided instead of going to Worlds, I'm going to run my own Gen Con. So
can I be one of the prizes?
That potentially.
Would, and that would be amazing.
It's a better prize than a plastic first player token,
oh,
I suppose.
Let's not even.
Yeah, let's. How about we not touch the prize support?
Aaron Glazer went so hard on that stuff with his message and then his response from the message to OP. It's just all.
It's been said.
It's been said. It's all been said. The prizes sucked. We get it. Hopefully they get better for Worlds, but I doubt it. It's just the way it is.
I would like to point out one thing, though. I did like the Melee playmats because I didn't get a regional playmat this year. Now I have one, sans Ed. So I was pretty content with that one, so I thought that worked.
But yeah.
It's not as prestigious. You know, it doesn't say regional. It just says Melee on it.
There are fewer of that one.
Really? Oh, yeah, I guess it is. Yeah.
Only Origins and Gen Con with the Melee.
Oh, that's true.
And they did they.
It was
four or eight?
Eight.
So it's, there's only 16 of those playmats.
Okay. Okay.
As opposed to the, however many regionals.
Yeah, are. That's fair. That's fair. Huh. Well, that's interesting. Well, we've gotten some neat stuff since the last time we've talked.
Well, we've been away for so long, you know. Essentially, like maybe 100 cards have been spoiled from other podcasts and from FFG's own articles.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to talk about, at least for us. I'm sure everyone else has already talked about it enough, but.
But no one's talked about the Silent Sisters
well,
and how they're a 7 card. I think that's pretty cool.
A 7?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A 7.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I think they're probably trash in Joust, but I did play them in Draft, and they are actually very good in Draft.
Okay.
Because you get a lot of dead pile.
They're great print. They were pretty decent in 1.0.
Yeah, just having things that get strength bumps for things in the dead pile,
yeah.
Especially
well,
when
I
you
guess,
have resets
I
up.
Guess once Valar comes out, they'll definitely be a lot
oh,
better.
Oh, I really wish they would come out with Pale Mare before Valar.
Oh, I mean, that's another discussion that's been had to death, but I think Pale Mare would be so perfect for this game.
Yeah, I really do too.
Like, it would be a reset without fucking yourself over. Right? I mean, if you run Valor, it's 2 gold and you're fucking yourself
that's
over.
That's the draft plot where you, like, you keep a total of 8 gold worth of 9 gold
you
worth.
Kill
I think it's 10 gold.
You keep 10 gold worth of characters and kill the rest.
Yeah.
I saw something online. It was just I think everyone probably saw it, but it was the image of, like, from Harry Potter with the mirror, and like the mirror shows you your deepest desire, and it's just been edited to have Pale Rider.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, that's been talked about, but that would be so amazing if we could get a card like that. That's like a reset without, you know, ruining your board. So
yeah.
The problem I have with Valor, and I know this is already a tangent, we haven't even gotten to the topic of this podcast, but the problem I had with Valor was that it's basically shoehorning itself into only being an offensive reset, because it's 2 gold. So unless you have a bunch of saves, you're losing that round, you have no claim, and then you might lose the next round because your opponent will be building their board state while you're dead.
If you've been hitting their hand, if you've been controlling them in other ways, and you Valor as defensive, like they've got a better board control but no hand, and you've got a better hand, but no board, and then you Valor, you've kind of evened things out just a little bit, and you have the potential to come back from that a lot better. I mean, I don't think it's just going to be offensive Valor. If we're talking about offensive Valor,
it
the only
be.
Houses that are really going to be using it are Greyjoy and Greyjoy.
Targ.
Yeah, it's true.
Targ
well.
Has some saves and some get stuff back out of the dead pile.
It might be nice to see Blood Magic Ritual actually see play.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that...
Yeah, maybe. Put those dragons back in play with the... event that I can't remember the name
what
of
was it
from
Fire
the
and Fire
set.
And Blood.
Yeah, that one.
Says the Targ player.
I don't think anyone's really played Targ in a while. I think the stigma.
I played it in our we had a summer kit tournament.
Okay.
2-3 weeks ago, I played them. Did not do well.
No.
So.
You crushed me. It was like a seven-minute game. It was pathetic.
What was that?
The R game?
Yeah.
Like 8 minutes long or something?
Yeah.
That's just setup right there, isn't it?
I think it was like setup in round one, and he killed like five people.
Nice.
He double-dracked me in round one. And,
I double-dracked his Eddard, I believe.
Fast Eddie, yeah.
And killed him. It was pretty nice.
Wow.
With ice on him.
But I think that was
bad.
Wait, that's 9 strength? So he had Danny out, I guess.
So what's the deal with...
Eddard plus ice is just 8 strength.
Isn't he a 6?
Yeah, 6 plus 2 with...
Oh, ice is just 2.
Yeah, it's 3 cost, 2 strength.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So what's the deal with Targ now? Are there any builds that are worthwhile, or is it still not enough burn in the deck?
I think it's not enough burn. I'm actually looking forward to next pack with the Blood of My Blood and the generic Blood Rider.
Okay, yeah.
I think that might actually give you enough...
You're talking about the Devoted Blood Rider?
Yeah, it might give you enough... Dothraki in order to make a Dothraki deck, the Dothraki Outrider actually do something.
That's true.
And then you can, instead of running Danny and or Miri, you can just load up on all the Blood Riders and do stuff. Because I think Ago plus Recaro, you know, two turns of Intimidate or two challenges with Intimidate, that could actually be pretty solid.
And for people who don't know, the Devoted Blood Rider is coming out in War of the Five Kings, which is the next pack.
Yeah.
It's a 3 cost, 2 strength military icon, Blood Rider Dothraki, and it states each Blood Rider character you control gets plus 1 strength. Then there's Blood of My Blood, which is a 3 cost event, non-loyal, challenges action, search your deck for a Blood Rider character and put it into play, shuffle your deck at the end of the phase. If that card is still in play, return it to your hand. I mean, that's great.
I don't mean to correct you, Mickey, but the name of the whole cycle is War of the Five Kings.
Oh, is it really?
This is a four family,
honor.
No, you're 100% correct. I prefer being correct.
No, he doesn't. He hates
and
it.
I've been thinking about Targ builds in general right now, and I'm actually... I want to use the Beggar King that just came out.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have Beggar King plus Milk, then is Vase Dothrak actually going to be useful now?
Because no, that will never be useful.
I disagree. I think it's getting close because... There's going to be a lot of decks running Milk, a lot of decks running Kraven, and so if you don't want to devote...
And then the Martells, obviously.
Plus Martell is a thing. So if you don't want to devote your plot deck to Confiscation and have other cards like Rattleshirts in your deck, you can run 2 Vase Dothrak plus 3 Beggar King, 3 Milks...
Which you would have anyway.
Yeah.
I think we're
plus your normal 3 Viserys. You might be able to do something there.
In 1.0, and I'm sorry to bring this up, but there was, and Mike, remind me about this, Lady Daenerys' Chambers.
Yeah.
That allowed you to...
Attachment, recursion.
Yeah, and basically when you played a Targ card, you were able to grab an attachment from your discard pile and put it back into hand.
Yeah, any Targ character you played, you could get an attachment with printed or equal cost back at your discard.
It was
pile.
A limited action though, so you can only do it once per round. But still, it was a strong. I mean, do we think? Do you guys think that we're going to see
the existence of Crown of Gold? I think prevents that from happening.
You'd
have to play a 4 cost.
Yeah,
you'd have to
play
a
Blood Rider and get
back.
Crown of Gold back.
It was cost equal. Or
I mean,
less.
I don't think it's going to be that hard to play a 4
cost
character.
You're actually saying that playing a 4-cost character is a hard thing to do in this
in
game?
In Targ, yeah.
Everything.
They got Jogo, they got Ago, they got...
Magister Oreo, you know.
They got plenty.
It's a thing.
It is a thing. But I don't know, that's one thing that the moment that we see a card that gives us discard or just discard pile recursion, I don't know, I'm going to be absolutely... That's the house I'm going
to
play.
I want it to be a thing again. I really, really miss it from 1.0.
Oh, no, it was terrible.
Targ didn't have any draw, but they had recursion for days. Yeah. Death pile and discard pile, and... Ugh.
I just want them to reprint one card from 1.0, Street Waif. They're never going to do it. Are you guys familiar?
I think we've spoken about this card maybe 5 times on this podcast.
Still not enough, though. What was it? 2 cost, 1
2 cost, 1 strength, intrigue.
No icon. Oh, intrigue icon. Kneel it. If you have 2 or more cards in your discard pile, your opponent chooses one to give back to put back in your hand. That was pretty cool.
I'm legitimately sick of hearing about that card.
I'm not. I want it. I want it back.
I've heard about it so much. Yeah, Mickey, well, I don't know what the Waif did.
We'll change the subject. Since we're supposed to be talking about spoilers and we're already talking about Targ,
I would
like to talk about the House of the Undying,
which
is a reprint. It is a 6-cost Targ location. 6 costs. It says, remove it from the game to put all characters from your opponent's dead pile into play under your control until the end of the phase.
At the end of the phase, return.
At the end of the phase, they all go back to the dead pile.
And it cannot be saved.
Was that Aegon's Hill in 1.0?
Rhaenys Hill.
Rhaenys Hill, that's right. That's right.
So many hills.
6 costs, though.
It's so worth it, though.
6 costs.
But that's
so going to
be,
only
that's
gonna
be one of your
kill
income
a bunch
locations.
Of people to put in
oh,
there.
Oh, because Targ has so many issues with killing
it
people.
It does right now.
It does right now.
That's the problem. There's not enough burn. And
you've
don't
got
tell
Miri,
me.
You've got Tears,
Miri is not
you've
burn.
Got Burn, you've got military challenges.
You know
with
what the
Drogo.
Saddest thing that I've had to experience is? Miri with Kraven on her. It was... It was really sad, and I never want to have to deal with that again. But my point is, sure, I mean, oops, sorry. Character-based burn is one thing. I mean, character-based killing is one thing. But Targ just needs straight-up burn. They need
they
events.
Do.
Yeah,
this is
and,
true.
And they just don't have it right
but
now.
But I still can't wait for that to come out, because you play that thing, yeah, it costs 6. It's all you can play for one round, but then it just sits there on the board, and your opponent has to worry about it.
Until they just, what, kill it with... Put to the
for
torch.
For me, I think
like
it's. I really
who
have
plays
to,
put to the torch.
For me, I think it's going to be a wait and see card because right now I don't think. Right now in this metagame, it would be totally a win more card because you don't have ways to get stuff into your opponent's dead pile without having a solid board presence. And so if you're doing military challenges with two with Drogo, or if you're doing Miri Mezdor. She's there on the table, and it doesn't matter if you're bringing all their dead characters back or not. You're going to win that game. But in the future, when there's Valar and other means of getting stuff into your opponent's dead pile, then I think that it could be a comeback card or a surprise card to do something. But as it stands now, I think that if you have a bunch of stuff in their dead pile, you're already going to win that game.
Yeah, Velar is going to make it playable.
My only problem with it is it seems like it's sort of giving up one turn of production for another turn of production that you just lose all of it at the end. It's not terrible out of Targaryen, I guess, if you can manage to get a couple challenge addings like Khal Drogo and stuff like that. So you can actually do something with all the characters you're getting. But other than that, it's just you spend 6 gold... for a future plan, and then when the future plan comes around, you have a really awesome turn, I'm not going to lie, but then they all just go away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because, I mean, you're using it to close. You know, your opponent has 2 characters with renown in their dead pile. Sure, why not? You're getting 2 extra power. You
that's can just, I think it's going into what we already said, though, is if you're, like, spending a whole turn to set up a closing,
sure,
you sort of have to be... ahead already.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
or it has to be a really close game, and then you just need that one final push.
Oh, it's not even necessarily a closer, though. It's a stall tactic. If you can use their dead pile to survive for a round, no power goes off your house, no cards come out of your hand, nothing dies on your side because you just put 5 characters from their dead pile into play to defend for you. That's worth 6 gold.
It's a wait and see card for me too. We'll
like
see how
said,
it goes.
I think the jury's out for me as to whether it'll be have a place or not.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well,
there are so many cards that I'm like, damn, look at that effect.
Speaking of
just never gets played,
6 cost cards that you know actually are useful right off the bat. One that I have a big problem with actually, Roose Bolton. Now you know, I mean, is it worth? I'm pretty sure everyone's heard about Roose Bolton at this point. So I want to know.
We should read it, and there's no reason
sure,
not
of
to.
Of course. I'll happily read it. Roose Bolton is a 6-cost military intrigue, non-loyal Stark character. Reaction. After you win a challenge in which Roose Bolton is attacking, choose up to X total strength worth of characters controlled by the losing opponent. X is Roose Bolton's strength. sacrifice Roose Bolton to kill each of those characters.
It's important to note his strength is 4.
Yes.
You did not mention that.
I did mention that.
He did.
Okay.
Can I get an apology, please?
No, you can just keep going.
All right, cool. So with strength pumping, I mean, first off, we have Winterfell.
Gates of Winterfell.
Winterfell.
Yeah, Winterfell Castle, yeah. Plus one strength right there. So we've got 5 at that point. We've got...
The Winterfell is the plus one strength. Winterfell Castle is the unique skill, plus 2.
Yes, yep.
When you have 2 of them.
Exactly.
And then you have 4 the North if you really want to do that.
For the North might see play again because it replaces itself.
Needle.
Yeah, Needle as well. Needle.
Ice. Needle.
Ice is really ice as obvious.
Well, but the problem with ice is if you use it, then you can't use his reaction.
His reaction is after you win, right?
Yeah,
after you win,
use ice and then use him.
Yeah, but then he wouldn't get the ice bonus.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He wouldn't get the ice
so
bonus.
If he
couldn't you use him and then use ice?
Well, if you use him, then ice goes back to your hand.
Ice goes back to your hand then.
Well, wait, so you use ice to kill one of their big guys and then, you know, wipe the rest of their weenies.
Yeah.
I mean, or you just, I don't see the problem in that.
Yeah.
So you lose 2 strength. You just killed a 4 strength, 5 strength character.
But him with Needle is incredible, right? Because
I think Needle will actually see play once Roose is around.
Yeah, because it gets him plus 2 strength, so he's a 6 with that Winterfell.
It's funny
7
that,
with Winterfell. And then he gets returned to your hand, right? That's what it says, you know, sacrifice
and then
Needle to return him to your hand.
Playing with that Catelyn, you can get power from it too. Woo!
I don't think you're ever not playing the 4.
I know.
I've seen some decks that run the fat cat, as they call her. And
why do they call it fat cat?
Because she's fat.
Gets big.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And it's interesting, but I still think, I mean, for 4 cost, you're not going to get a better character than Core Cat.
I mean, I think that there are decks that will run fat cat, but she'll be. Or those decks, I think, will always be tier 2.
Yeah.
They'll be fun game night kit type decks, whereas if you're playing a real deck, if you're trying to win, then you're playing 4 cost cat.
If you're playing a deck that you actually want to win with.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, if you guys don't mind, I mean, we're in Stark and we're still in the chapter pack.
Well, did you want to talk about why it's a poorly designed card?
What's that? I just think it's ridiculous. With all the strength pumping, you can board wipe someone. It's a little valor in your own hand. And with Needle, he just comes right back to hand.
I do think that at least it's not kill however much you won by or kill the total strength that you had in the challenge. It's at least only his strength.
Yeah.
But still, I think it's... I think Stark has a lot of ways to pump up strength.
Stark Tyrell will be a thing. Marjorie, that's 3 extra strength right there.
Yeah.
There's just so many different ways. I'm not saying you use all of them because then, you know, you've got a bloated deck that's not going to win anything. But, I mean, even just Marjorie and him, that's 7 strength worth of characters.
So if you if it said printed strength, would you be happier with it?
No, I just think
you're like, no, I still don't.
I would be a little happier with it, but I mean, if it kept him at 4, if it locked him at 4, he'd be useless. A 6 cost for killing 4 strength worth of characters.
Yeah,
and so I mean, there's no way to. I don't know with that with Harrenhal, which is in the same pack. I mean, Stark is just too much targeted kill at this point.
The problem is he's an ally. So that Martell can play Ser Aerie Oakheart and pay 2 gold and kill him right off the bat.
Yeah.
I guess that's going to be a thing soon.
It's going to work out fantastically.
There's
only one
split on
ally
that card.
That's been spoiled so far.
That's true.
So. Yeah.
Wait, there's only what?
There's only one ally hate card that's been spoiled.
Okay. I thought you said only one ally, and I was
going to
say very wrong.
Mike's like, excuse me, what did you say? I'm about to correct somebody over here.
And it's going to be Mickey.
Oh. No, he tried and failed. But, yeah, I mean, I think with that, Stark is really cementing itself as the direct kill house. I mean, there's something you want dead on the table. It's dead. I mean, there's nothing.
They're the kill house. They're the rush house. They're the renown house. I mean,
yeah, but they're not the sack house. But anyway, I mean, like, you know, they tried pushing that in Wolves of the North, and that was cute. I mean,
yeah, I remember seeing that. I was just like, I mean, I love Fat Cat because she attempted to create a new deck type and
Crips.
Yeah,
right? Wasn't Crips the thing?
Yeah,
it was Crips.
Does anyone run Crips?
I experimented with it early on, but.
I never had any use for it.
But didn't end up keeping it around.
There was just no reason for it to be in there, yeah.
Because once you have it out, then they just don't do military challenges against you anymore, which I guess is okay, but they're not winning a lot of military challenges against you anyway because you're Stark.
Exactly.
And so it was really dependent on you having the sacrifice outlet, and the only sacrifice on demand was really Jon.
Yep.
And so there's just better interactions, I think.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Or you could just run Wolves Arya, right?
No. She can just sacrifice. Yeah, Core Arya will be index until the end of time.
Yeah.
She's way too efficient.
Really? Yeah, she really is. Free dupe on play. I mean, mm-hmm.
With
how do
stealth.
You beat that? Yeah, right? Yeah,
with stealth and up to two icons. I mean, yeah, it's just. She was just a really good card to. And like, she was good, but not overpowered. It's just like a perfect. She's kind of like the perfect design of a card, in my opinion. Something that's really good.
I will say, I hate
not...
getting my Arya milked, which happened to me twice at Gen Con.
Oh,
that
no.
kind of sucked.
Yeah, well.
Actually, the champ, Chris Schoenthal, he milked Arya instead of Kat. Which was an interesting choice
because of the stealth. Oh,
but the stealth, yeah. He was, and she was my only military icon too.
Oh,
so
there you go.
Yeah, so it was kind of a pro move there.
I watched your game against him. That was so rough. I just it was painful to watch.
Why was
game.
It painful? Actually, I wasn't. So I was. I had to work on during the Joust tournament. I only got to play melee.
No,
so
it's on Rob St. John's channel.
Yeah. Around to watch.
I won't belabor it, but just the top eight match that I was in with Chris.
Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thanks. We both had pretty decent setups. He had a Mance, a reducer, and a Rose Road, or another reducer, I'm not sure which.
Okay.
And then I had a Cat and two Chuds or something like that,
sure.
and some economy. And I got Winterfell out first turn.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I'm feeling pretty good. I have Kat and Winterfell. I'm safe against his Gregor, Miri,
sure.
all that stuff. So his flop was Mance. Turn one, he played Gregor.
Mm-hmm.
Turn two, he played Tywin.
Yeah.
Turn three, he played Miri.
Yeah, it was
How
ridiculous.
Do you do
and
that?
So I just didn't have anything that I could do against it.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's where you're like, I need Valor so bad right now. Yeah, because I was watching that game. I was just like, Jesus, it's just, how can he afford this shit? I mean, it's just ridiculous how insignificant plots are that don't give you gold. It's like, you can just fill a plot deck of, like, trading, calling, noble cause, something else that gives you a bunch of gold. I'm just going to vomit characters onto the board. And just...
Why do you think I ran Naval for as long as I did?
Yeah.
Is it worth running Naval anymore? So I'm building
not right now, not with summer and winter being
yeah,
because
like
thing.
Right now I'm building a Night's Watch or I'm tweaking my Night's Watch Kings of Winter deck, and I was running Naval in there because it seemed like a good fit. But then, and Joe pointed this out, you know, with summer winter schemes all over the place, what's the point right now?
I actually think that the instead of Naval, you mm-hmm. run either Varys's Riddle.
Sure.
Or
okay.
Summer Festival or Summer Harvest.
I can't run Summer Harvest in a King's Winter.
Yeah,
oh,
King's
okay.
Winter
so
deck.
Then you run Varys' Riddle because
yeah,
then you fuck over Summer Harvest.
You have to assume that if you're playing a winter deck, if you're playing a winter deck, then they're going to try to open with a summer plot
sure.
to protect them. And so then you Varys' Riddle, reduce their plot gold to two.
Yep.
And
still.
It's almost a Naval.
Okay.
It's, but you also have five gold, so you don't get screwed if
sure.
they don't play
yeah.
Summer Harvest. Or
still
something like
the
that.
Stupidest fucking.
I don't. I still
I've ever heard
I'm,
in my
I
entire
mean,
life.
I get it. I don't want to be able to get it
Yeah.
I hear you guys talk, or specifically Joe. I know that you really don't like this ruling, but it makes perfect sense to me.
It. I never like. Okay. So this is the argument that I had with.
Belcher's mad.
This is the argument I was having on Facebook with a bunch of people. It's not that I don't understand it. It's that I don't like it.
Well, what's not to like about it? That's just how.
Wait,
rules work.
What did I miss on here? What's this ruling? All
right, so the ruling is that you know, Summer Harvest says when it's flipped, choose a plot,
define
set X equal to 2 plus what the gold is
right.
on that plot. Versus Riddle says copy whatever is
right,
on the
right.
plot. So the ruling is that both plots go off, and then Summer Harvest is trying to set it to 7. And versus Riddle is trying to set it to 2. Whoever's first player gets to decide what X is set at.
So if you're and Varys's Riddle has more initiative. So
right.
Varys's Riddle, if they know how to play the game, they'll go first, and then they'll have Summer Harvest go off. It sets it to 7, and then they'll have Varys's Riddle go off, and it resets it to 2.
Oh, I see.
It's ridiculous. I mean,
yes, it's self-references.
Yes, that's very.
It's self-referential,
stupid.
So it.
I don't think it's stupid. I think it just makes sense.
It makes
it does
sense.
Make sense.
It makes sense. It's just stupid. So, you know, I'm not going to...
Because Joe doesn't like rules.
No, this is what happens when lawyers write the rule book. It just becomes a situation where these things just become, like, you can't argue against them, but they just make you angry.
You can't argue against them because they make sense. It doesn't mean that you have to be happy with it. It's just rules.
Exactly. It comes down to a point where you're like, man, this card shouldn't have been printed this way. This is stupid.
I thought they reset this game because there were so many issues with rules not making sense in 1.0.
That's the thing, though. It does make sense.
Like, I knew the rules it makes inside sense and after out you, in 1.0.
It makes sense after someone explains it to you.
Just terrible. And that was part of the reason they said, let's make 2.0, is because we've got windows within windows within windows, and Moribund happens, and...
The whole
are you legitimately saying that these rule interactions are at the level of 1.0? Because the what I've heard of 1.0 is this is nowhere near that.
It's not as complex, but it's just as nonsensical.
Yeah.
Disagree.
I cannot confirm. I have one word to prove you wrong. Moribund. I'm sorry. I still cannot wrap my head around Moribund rulings. So, I don't know. I think they did streamline the rules.
See, Moribund actually made sense to me.
Anyway.
Yeah,
so
moving on.
We've been talking
The only reason it's not a big deal, I think, is because it's the ruling on one card interacting with one other card right
sure.
now.
Yeah.
If a whole bunch of situations start springing out, or like various riddles just fucks over the intention of plots for some reason,
sure.
then it'll be a big deal.
Fair enough.
So we've been talking for almost 30 minutes, We have not even.
Let's throw a party.
Are we done? We can.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I can't even hear you, so it doesn't matter. Anyway, we've been talking for 30 minutes. We have not yet announced that we actually have We have our own spoilers.
We do have our own spoilers
for the Lions of Castle Rock. It is the Night's Watch cards because this is a Night's Watch podcast.
Also disagree.
I don't even think we need to talk about that. Just move on and give the spoilers to him.
Joe plays Night's Watch, and I've been watching Mickey build a Night's Watch deck for the entire 30 minutes we've been talking. So I think they might be the majority right now.
And John,
I would like to point out, I beat Joe with this Night's Watch deck.
And John has already said that he has enough cards to make two Night's Watch decks almost. So I think we can legitimately say this is a Night's Watch podcast now. So it makes sense that we have two Night's Watch spoilers from the Lions of Casterly Rock Deluxe Box.
I wish they just, you know, were better.
yeah, but okay.
So every Night's Watch player
no,
ever.
They are in sweet. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Night's Watch has been killing it the last two chapter packs. So I'm going to give these a pass. So we got Kraven, we got Ari, and Ed and White Tree, so this is fine. But anyway, I'll read them. And you can come to your own conclusions. Sweet Donald Hill, he's a non-loyal, unique character, 2 strength, 2 cost, with an intrigue icon.
He's so sexy.
He's a bastard and a steward. No attachments except weapon. And while Sweet Donald Hill is defending, each attacking character loses all keywords. So
keywords is a word.
You savored the flavor of keywords.
When I first read it, I thought it was traits. I was like, this is garbage. He's not a lord when he's attacking
me. Doesn't
even
make sense.
I mean, it doesn't affect stealth.
No, it doesn't affect stealth. And he only has an injury icon. So, you know, I was just looking over the cards, and me and John were talking about this a little bit this morning, but there's really not all that much that it stops right now. It's mostly insight, like Doran Martell and...
Pillage.
Daenerys.
Pillage from the mountain. Pillage from...
He doesn't have a military icon.
So
he can't
the
stop
problem
the
is that he only participates in intrigue challenges.
At a base, like as the only card.
As printed. Yeah. And so there's a lot of intrigue, or a lot of cards that have intrigue icons that have insight.
Yes.
Not as many have intimidate or renown.
That's correct.
So
yeah.
You have Euron and...
Mance and Tywin.
And Tywin that have... innate renown and an intrigue icon.
Sure.
And then only Janos Slint has intimidate and an intrigue icon. So yeah. Those are the main things that I think he's useful for for combating.
That. Yeah, I can see that.
I think insight is one of the least crucial to cancel because, they get a card, but it's not impacting what's going on right now.
Sure.
Yeah. I think that if he had one more icon, I think he'd be awesome. I think he'd be an A card.
At two costs, though, with another icon?
That just doesn't happen.
Not for Night's Watch. Icon, then.
What's that?
He could cost more. It would be okay if he cost
a power or military instead of intrigue would even make him better.
Oh, yeah, that would definitely.
I mean, if you were
really a power icon, I think that would be amazing.
Yeah.
If he was a power icon, then I think that he would be a two copies in most decks, maybe even three, depending on what your build is. But with just an intrigue icon, I don't know. I mean, even the renowned guys like Euron and Mance and Tywin, they could just do military and power instead.
Right, do their other
challenge. If you have Sweet Donald Hill, is he stopping much? And that's the question I don't really know. Now, granted, you can have Sir Alistair Thorne out, or you can have a practice blade on him, and then he gets a military icon, at least when defending in terms of Alistair. But is that enough? I don't know. I mean, people are already not really committing military challenges against Night's Watch.
Yeah. Just because of the event?
Yeah, because of Watch Around the Walls, and in addition, you have Aemon, so unless you have some things that are triggering off it or renown, there's no real reason to do a military challenge against Night's Watch.
But and I was talking with Joe earlier today. This almost makes me want to run Noble Lineage in a deck.
Okay,
but he's no attachments except weapon.
So it's like, oh man,
so you can't do that anyway.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much stuck with practice blades in order to make him useful in the current environment.
Sure.
I think.
Now,
if Night's Watch gets like a practice blade that adds a power challenge somehow, then maybe. But it has to be a weapon. So
I almost think that would. They should have done the Dragonglass Dagger to give a power icon. But they chose not to. So.
Yeah. So I mean,
he's
all right.
Man.
He's a 2-for-2.
I'm actually surprised we talked this long about him.
Well,
frankly,
he's better than the other card.
Oh yeah, that's true. So.
What is the other card, Joe?
The other card is Bridge of Skulls. It is a.
Is that even in the books? Is there a Bridge of Skulls? What's the Bridge of Skulls?
Yeah, it's on the western side of the wall.
over there on the west.
So it's basically where the end of the wall is.
Okay.
There's a big gorge that prevents the land crossings, but there is the Bridge of Skulls there.
Okay.
And there's a big battle there. Mance sends 300 raiders over there in order to distract from the main siege force coming in at the Castle Black.
Yeah, I don't remember this.
Bowen Marsh gets injured there, I believe.
That's okay.
I actually looked that up today.
John's like, I don't actually remember this. I actually Googled Bridge of Skulls this morning.
I remember the Bridge of Skulls being in the books. I just didn't remember what.
Sure.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a it's unique. It is non-loyal. It is one cost, location, the North trait. Interrupt. When the challenges phase ends, choose an opponent who did not initiate a military challenge against you this phase. That player discards one card at random from his or her hand.
He just screams melee.
It does. Well, okay, so I was actually talking to somebody about this the other day. It screams melee, but at the same time, it could totally fuck you over in melee.
Why? Because then everyone...
Yeah, because then everyone wants to military you.
Like, if you play this, it's like, everyone's just going to be like, all right, well, then I'm going to attack Joe for military. And then you have one Aemon, so you save one person, but then if you can't defend the other military challenges, you lose two characters per turn, because nobody wants to lose a card from their hand.
You can't even use it to make deals, though, because it's not... Nobody cares enough about losing a single card out of their hand that they're going to offer you something in exchange for... you not using it against them.
I suppose. I mean, I don't play much melee, so I don't really know exactly how often people would be deal making.
Melee is amazing.
Yeah, but it just my problem is initiate a military challenge. So they can do a bastard daughter military challenge, and it stops this. I mean, I would prefer to say win a military challenge, because then at least it requires some sort of commitment from your opponent.
Or I actually think that I'm not sure that I'm going to be building a deck with it, but I don't think it's as bad as you might be. Sorry. I don't think it's as bad as you're making it out to be.
Choke, especially for a winter deck.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting in the damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of scenarios that you can make. So if you are running Alistair Thorne and you're running, what is the event, Watcher on the Walls that kills, you can force them into making a military challenge with you. If they don't, then they're going to lose cards from their hand. Okay. Yeah. I also think it has an interesting interaction in Martell, where you can totally deny them the military challenge with Imprisoned and Nymeria.
Okay.
Or you can...
Is it loyal?
It's
no.
Not loyal.
It's not. Okay.
Or also in Martell, you can force them into a military challenge in order to then Vengeance Thralia them.
Yeah, okay.
Or do the Bone Way... I mean, anything that benefits from you
knowing what a
challenge is going to be coming at you.
For sure.
So while I don't think that it's going to be going in many decks or a lot of decks, I think that there could be a deck that you could build around it, and it might be fun to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can build around it. And I mean, I've played Night's Watch a little bit. So when I was...
I stopped listening when you said something about using the Bone Way in a deck. I just kind of zoned out after that.
The Bone Way almost won Worlds.
The guy who came in second at Gen Con was running the Bone Way in his deck.
It almost won Gen Con. It would have won Gen Con if Treachery was not in Chris's hand on the final turn. But anyway.
I still don't think it's a good card.
It is. It's a fantastic card. But I digress. Yes, I do. I was... When I was way back when we were doing the Indianapolis Regionals and Watcher on the Walls had just come out, I was like, I'm running three of this thing. I'm just going to run three of it forever. It's just such an amazing card. It can kill so many cards. This is awesome. And then I realized, for the most part, people don't really need to declare military challenges against you, and they don't need to win military challenges against you in order to do well against Night's Watch. Because first of all, you have Aemon. And then you have Alistair, who can come in on a military challenge, so they can skip their military challenge if you ever save four gold and your fealty.
And this punishes them for doing that.
Yeah, it punishes them a little bit. So how many times are you going to save four gold, though? So what I realized was, when I had two Rangers standing and Watcher on the Walls in my hand and fealty available or a gold, my opponent would look at my board and say, I'll just do an all-in power challenge instead. And they get all the renown from power challenges. Really, the only characters that I can consistently kill with Watcher on the Walls was Jamie and Gregor. Those are basically the only two. If you didn't have Jamie and Gregor out, I was not killing anything with Watcher on the Walls. So yes, this gives a minor benefit to running that whole suite. But Watcher on the Walls, it creates a situation where unless your opponent actually has renown on things that only have military icons or something like that, they can just skip it and do the renown with their power icons or with their entry icons in the case of, like, Tywin and Euron.
I also think
so
this might open up an avenue for a Night's Watch wall deck where you try to attack their hand. You don't just sit back and, you know, defend all the time. You attack their hand some and then use resets, so Varys or, you know, Valar or whatever is coming down the pike to reset the board. And so then you can start again with your wall defense once they're out of hand and then also out of board.
Of course. And you've got everything in their discard or dead pile at that point. You're stealing with Yoren. You're doing everything.
The
you
Night Gathers.
Yeah,
exactly.
Take the black, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Varys plus Night's Watch are going to be really good friends for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, me and Mickey just played the game and he played Varys. I fucking hate that card.
I mean,
you
overextended. You had like seven characters on the board. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to Varys. Like, I played my plot around getting Varys out. I just didn't care about my characters. I let things go through.
It was five characters.
Okay. You still lost.
It was five characters. But, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But, I mean, going back to the spoilers that we had real quick. I mean, it's not nothing too... I don't think it's anything too groundbreaking in this. I don't think Night's Watch really needs...
I think it's a, you know, C-level. Both of them are probably C-level cards. Yeah. You can fit them in a deck.
Run a one of each maybe at some point.
Yeah,
they're niche.
But and I also think that, you know, Night's Watch has been getting a decent amount of really good cards this cycle, and so having some singles is okay instead of doubles and triples.
I actually found a deck where the Rookery works.
Winter decks.
In my winter deck.
Winter decks love the Rookery.
I run a Rookery in my winter deck as well.
Yeah, just like, you know, draw a card, plus one reserve. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that any day of the week.
When you're reducing people's reserve and you're gaining reserve, it's going to work out pretty well.
Or mitigating at the very least.
Yeah, if you're mitigating the negative that you're giving yourself. But, I mean, Night's Watch, like you said, these cards aren't fantastic. They could see a little bit of play. But, like you said, we've been getting a lot of great cards. And there's even another one that was spoiled originally at Gen Con in the draft packs. You know, for those of you who didn't go to Gen Con, they had a bunch of draft packs, and, like, you know, they did little drafts and everything like that. And I didn't play in it, but apparently it's pretty cool. And in the draft packs, they had a bunch of cards that were unreleased from the second cycle, and one of them was Khorne Halfhand.
Oh God, this card!
And I was
is
just,
everyone familiar?
I'll read in a second, okay. But. I was just watching Shamar, Throne Runner, play in his draft, and he had it on the boards, and I was just like, wait, what the fuck is this? It's a Night's Watch character. What is this? Oh my God, this card is amazing. So it is a Khorne Halfhand is a unique, non-loyal, 6-cost character with a military and power icons, 5 strength. He has print. He's a ranger, and he has printed renown. In Night's Watch, he has printed renown.
That's very important.
Yeah. And no attachments except weapons, so you can't milk this motherfucker. Reaction. After you win a military challenge in which Khorne Halfhand is participating, choose and kill a non-unique character with a lower strength than his controlled by the losing opponent. The reason I said comma is because you don't need to be attacking with him. You can be defending with this guy and still trigger his reaction. So you have Khorne and you have Old Bear on the board. They basically can't do a military challenge unless they can get over 12 or 13 strength. Because if they don't and you defend, you can kill anyone on their board. Or any non-unique character on their board, essentially.
I'm happy they made it non-unique character. I mean, that's as opposed to, you know,
yeah, to me
Stark.
It sounds really awesome, but then when you start thinking about it with the non-unique and has to be strength lower than 5 or whatever, it basically becomes a 2-claim military.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so when you compare that to something like Cersei, okay, sure. He's higher cost, higher strength, similar thing with raising the claim on one specific challenge, and then, but he gains renown for his additional cost. So while I think it sounds like, oh my God, this is, you know, broken, it's, when you think about it, it's not that bad.
The one thing Night's Watch is really lacking, in my opinion, is power grab. You know, I mean, ultimately, if you're not playing a wall deck, how do you, and Joe pointed this out earlier, how do you get power? What are you going to do for power? Are you just going to sit for 55 minutes and, you know?
I was watching a game and a guy was playing Night's Watch Kings of Winter, and it was against, I forget what he was playing against, but he started out with White Tree out, and the first 2 turns he had meager contribution. He was just, meager, winter plots, yeah. And like, he's taking the guy's gold, so the guy was losing like 3 gold for the first 2 turns and then 2 gold on the next turn. But then the guy still ended up winning because the Night's Watch player didn't have an end game. It was just like, oh, I ran out of choke cards, and now you're refilling your board, and then you have renown, and then you kill.
I mean, that's
why
you run things
win.
Like Iron Throne. You run other, like, alternate ways of getting power.
Yeah, and Winter Festival helps that a little bit. But in our game, I hit your Winter Festival with the Summer Harvest. And
that's because,
like,
I'm an idiot and open with it. Totally might be.
So I think the renown on him is. Probably better than the reaction. Maybe not better, but as important as the reaction.
And then there's Longclaw. That gives renown, too. So, I mean, it's not like Night's Watch has been without renown.
Yeah, but...
I'm happy that he's a semi-decent card. It's a champ card for people that don't know, and the 1.0 version of it was really not very good. I'm sorry, Jonathan Benton, if you're listening. Your card never saw play.
How did you remember that it was his champ card?
Well, because
it
printed
says
on
it
the
right
on
the
card. But
oh,
but also
it literally said,
you know,
card designed by 2009.
I'm not
so.
Looking at it right now. I have no idea.
Yeah, I saw it in first edition. And first of all, it was a monocon, so just a military icon, And then I don't know if it had renown or not.
No, it did not.
It did not have renown. And then what was the printed cost strength on it? Like three?
Yeah,
maybe
like three or
so
something.
You could kill a three strength
character.
Yeah, you
could kill some chump that was going to die anyway.
Yeah,
I can't even remember exactly what the card did because it never saw play.
I think they greatly improved
it
in second edition.
Jonathan, they gave
you
a much better card than second edition.
Yeah, I think they greatly improved it in second edition. But, you know, well, what you guys are saying is like if I go second and I have him out and I have a Castle Black, I could conceivably, if my opponent's an idiot, kill three people. And this is just another card that dissuades military challenges. So this could work with Skull of, what was it, Bridge of Skulls?
Bridge of Skulls.
Yeah. So this could work with it as well. If you have this guy out and they can't win a military challenge, they don't even want to do it because he'll be in the challenge, he'll get a renown, and then he'll kill one of your characters, and then they might be able to come back and kill you again on another military challenge. So
I stand by Bridge of Skulls being a one-of, just throwing in there for fun. I don't know. I'm sorry. It just doesn't seem that.
Yeah, it's a fine card, but it's not something to build around.
Sure,
but
sure.
They do have cards that make it playable, and I think Khorne is another one of those that makes it playable. It's just, you can declare a military challenge against me, and then you're fucked, or you can just discard a card.
So, I guess moving on from Night's Watch for a second, what are they doing to Baratheon? So, we get two spoiled cards.
Yes!
So I guess this would have been like four casts ago, you know, Danny, four or five, Danny, you know, very succinctly put
Well, I've been saying it since the beginning.
That's true. That's true. That's true. You know, and it's unfortunately still true. We've got Salador Sand and the Valyrian. Now they're forcing Baratheon to be a Greyjoy banner house. I mean, that's the only reason you would print those
two
cards.
I love it.
Cards.
Like even in the article that they wrote, they're like, basically, you made this card, so you banner Kraken.
Yeah,
like, the throwing axe is a perfect card for Sand.
And I just don't get it. There's nothing that's really helping Baratheon in their Neil game, in their
King
dominance
Stannis.
Game. Yeah.
If you just wanted to play a different Neil
King
game.
Stannis, yeah.
He's no, true. No. King Stannis is terrible.
I know.
Let's see here. What does he do?
All right, we got Ascension.
Let's talk about Stannis. Okay, he's seven cost, first
all right,
off.
So let's which chapter pack is he coming
I'll
out?
Read it. You don't worry about it.
Okay.
Stannis Baratheon's unique, loyal, seven cost, military power icon, six strength, king and lord. During power challenges, each participating non-king character gets -1 strength. That includes your characters. Reaction, after you win dominance, choose a non-loyal character. That character cannot stand during the standing phase this round. So,
why no renown?
That's yes.
Lightbringer.
Yeah. Okay.
This is a king, and he has no renown. Nobody knows who the fuck this
He's
king
a
is.
So
he really helps you. He's a seven cost character that helps you win power challenges. You know, Baratheon really, really struggles with that, and during dominance.
So my thought is that he gives you. It's a different Stannis because the core Stannis, while is great in a Neil deck, he doesn't do much else for you. Like in my current Baratheon Banner Watch deck, I'm not even running Stannis. I'm running ranging parties instead because
well,
because
Stannis
better.
Makes it actively harder for you to defend if
yeah,
you're
yeah,
doing a Banner of the Watch.
Makes sense.
But so then a different Stannis that, you know, you can have a little bit of Neil in there without having to devote, go full on with
but
the lore package.
But he's seven cost and he doesn't have renown. All he does is win power challenges.
Yeah,
that's it.
And that's the most important challenge.
It's not even proven that he
true,
wins power challenges.
Yeah, okay.
Because
fair.
He's six strength, so if you're attacking and you -1 theirs, but you -1 your own. So if they're attacking with three and you're defending with three, they're -3, but you're -2. And
yeah, but then if you're defending with Stannis, you're winning that anyway.
And Stark just laughs at that. They just don't care. They're like, oh, -1 strength? All right, mitigated.
you know, if you have Stannis and Redkeep on the board and Stannis is defending power, you are never losing a power challenge. It's just not happening. So I don't think he's bad.
I don't think he's bad. I think that...
And what you can do is you can put disputed claim on him. And then he has renown. And then you can put Lightbringer on him using Salador Sarin.
Yeah, because that sounds like a great company. Oh, man. I mean, I think that's all we can really say about Baratheon. Have they spoiled any? Have I missing anything?
Ooh, is they got
a disputed claim.
Can you just talk about the boat? Can you talk about the boat too?
Are you talking about the Valyrian?
Danny wants to talk about the boat.
All right, we'll talk about the boat. So the Valyrian. It's I believe it is coming out in Tyrion's Chain. And,
yeah.
And
yeah,
so
it's the same one as Sarder.
Yep. It's a one cost, unique, non loyal warship. It's ambush 2, action, kneel the Valyrian to give an attacking character plus X strength until the end of the challenge. X is the number of gold in the defending player's
gold. Holy crap.
In the defending player's gold pool.
I feel like X plus 1 or yeah. anything. It could be literally a dead card against like half the matchups you go into. But you know, Salladhar Saan puts it in for free. So.
When I was reading this card, I was like, I can just picture the design room. They're like, okay, guys, people are complaining about Lannister.
Let's put some anti-Lannister.
What should we do?
Here.
Let's just make a card that gives people plus X strength for the gold. That'll fix Lannister.
It's like someone puts like a Tyrion deck down, or Tyrion down against Baratheon. It's like, you're gonna severely regret that decision. First, I'm gonna make an intrigue challenge. Oh no. You gain 2 gold. Plus 2 strength, bitches.
Oh my god. We actually never read Salladhar Saan.
Do we? Yeah, okay. So Salladhar, anyone got it in front of him?
Yeah,
it's
4
strength,
I've
military intrigue, unique, 4 costs, 3 strength, military intrigue. Reaction, after you win a challenge in which he is participating, put a warship location or weapon attachment into play from your hand.
Woo.
For free.
For free.
For free. So you get
it's great with throwing axe.
Right. You know, he might actually prove to be useful later on. In 1.0, Baratheon did have the most ships after
black sails.
Yeah, I'm just looking for like a Black Betha or something like that to come in.
Yeah, I mean, they were the second most navally after Greyjoy, so...
Yeah, I will say it is a good card.
He is a legitimately good card.
As the card pool grows, as there are more weapons, it's just in more ships, it'll just be better and better. But it's like...
And he has an intrigue icon, which is really
helpful.
What
is he doing for me now? What has he done for me lately? That's the problem.
Eating grapes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is eating grapes.
Really needs some cards like right fucking now.
It really does.
They've been falling out of the meta entirely.
They're not.
I do like the speed of claim, though. The being able to have a non-unique attachment that gives renown,
okay.
I think, is fairly solid. I mean, we just came off of a pack that had Knights of Summer in there.
Sure.
And having non-unique guys with renown is actually pretty strong.
Now, you have to pardon me.
Lions.
Which one?
The Lions Caster Leon.
Yeah, it's Lions.
Oh, is it? Okay, I haven't seen this one yet.
It's a one-cost attachment.
Okay.
Gives plus 2 strength and renown, but only while you have more power on your house card than your opponent.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And it can only be attached to a bastard, lord, or lady.
Okay.
Gendry is just going to get fucking big.
He's going to get swole.
Yeah, so... You know, it's fine. It's non-unique, like John said, so you can have 3 people who are disputing claim, and they can all have renown, and they can all have plus 2 strength, and that's fantastic, I suppose.
Edric Storm's not too bad.
Yeah, Edric Storm, we can talk about him. He's a bastard, so he works with the disputed claim.
Ooh.
He's a 2-for-2, unique non-loyal power icon, bastard. Reaction, after the dominance phase begins, choose a character. That character does not contribute its strength to its controller's total for dominance this phase.
I think he's a one of till the end of time.
Yeah, he is. I mean, when is that a bad ability? I don't think it ever is. I mean, if dominance is a power, it's a power every single turn. So if you're able to control it, and this is a really good way to control it, how many times do you win dominance by 1?
I mean, he's just a better Iron Throne, basically.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Essentially. So,
how much is your Tywin worth? Not anymore.
Oh, your Tywin's 10 strength. He's not part of this dominance phase.
But he did give me 3 more strength using the Valyrian in the last challenge phase.
Yeah, so, I mean, but I think the problem is they need more big characters, right? Isn't that what you've been complaining about forever?
I don't know about... I think they need more medium-sized characters.
Yeah,
they have, like, a couple of really good big characters, and then it's like, Crow... Gendry, Eldritch Storm.
How about just some standard 4/4 like four cost, four strength.
They need more cards like City Watch. It's like a four cost card. A Bicon is like, could I have something in that range?
And people
so
don't
I have
like
a mid
City Watch. I don't get why people don't like.
Oh
that
my
card.
God! It's like one of the
for that range. It's the only.
It's like one of the few good characters. It's like a, really good characters to come out for Baratheon since the core set.
It's a ranging party that costs that you can ambush in. I mean,
it's actually five cost. But four cost on the ambush.
Okay.
Yeah, like four,
okay.
four cost. Yeah, so it's a ranging party on ambush.
But
basically.
Gosh, they gave him that awesome Visited by Shadows attachment.
I don't get it. I just
it's,
don't.
It's for Roose Bolton. You just put three Visited by Shadows on him, and you're like, blow him up now, sucker.
Yo, one strength. One strength, Roose.
But besides the awesome pro play of Roose Bolton, I just don't get it.
When I first saw it, I was like, "Oh, that'd be a good banner card in a Targaryen deck." And it's like, "Oh,
no,
it's
loyal."
Loyal.
Oh, it's a zero cost terminal. Attachment that gives an opponent's character minus one strength.
No, yeah.
By the way, for those that don't
it's
know,
not terminal.
Oh,
yeah.
I do wish that it had the R'hllor trait.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
if it had a reward trait, that would be actually worth it.
Oh, it's a condition, too. Even better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know what they're trying to do. I mean, okay, so Gen Con. Do we see much Baratheon there? I wasn't there, so I have no idea.
So there's a Baratheon that made top cuts.
Really? What was it? Was it Dominance?
I actually played him twice in Swiss because I played him day one or day two.
Wait, what? Oh.
Yeah. Did they reset?
Yeah,
they reset for
they
the
reset
first round.
Day two.
Okay, okay.
They corrected it.
No. That's by intention.
Yeah, for a graduated cut.
Graduated cut, you by intention you can play the same person.
I thought they did the graduated cut intentionally. Not.
No, you're getting rid of strength of schedule.
I mean,
that
happened at Origins as well.
Yeah,
you could replay someone that you had played in the first day of Swiss.
I thought I read in Aaron's email that
he was incorrect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a feature of the graduated cut that you can play the same guy.
Okay, Aaron, you're fucking wrong.
But anyway. So I played, I think his name was Nick Hansen, mm-hmm. I think. He was playing a Baratheon Dominance kneeling package.
Okay.
Pretty much what you would expect.
Sure.
Sounds like you beat him twice, right?
No, he beat me once, I beat him once.
Oh, okay.
You were running Stark, right?
Yeah.
Baratheon beat it. Was it a bad draw on your part?
No, so really it's... he was able to milk my Rob... And then deal with my John.
Okay.
And so it was, you know, and one of the things that was different about his deck that probably was to his advantage and why he made top eight is he was running Naval, and
okay.
he was able to he was very good at figuring out when to hit with Naval.
Sure, sure, sure.
And so if you weren't expecting it, which a lot of people weren't in Swiss,
okay,
you got hit by it, and so I actually got hit by it. The first time I came up against him in the first day of Swiss.
Sure.
The second day of Swiss, when I came up against him, I was expecting it. And so I played around it. But he also expected that I was going to be expecting it. So,
yeah.
I was able to get early a quick enough start that... and he had a pretty bad setup.
Okay.
So I was able to get past him.
Sure.
Didn't have to worry about the Naval. But, yeah, it was just the standard Dominance Neil stuff. What really was surprised me is just how quickly he would get to 10 power.
Okay.
You know, turn two or three, he was at 10 power and was like, crap. Like, I wasn't expecting this, and now I, you know, can't win Dominance anymore.
Sure.
And you have the painted table out, so I have to win power against you, which is difficult enough. And so it was very interesting. I liked his build a lot. I don't know... if it's still going to be great with the summer plot,
sure.
the seasons coming out, because he's not going to be able to hit with Naval and slow the game down that way.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I think it'll evolve, but I think Baratheon's definitely competitive.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I didn't have much faith. I haven't had much faith in Baratheon.
Yeah. There weren't a ton of Baratheon decks there.
And that's really down to Pilot, I guess.
I think it was all skill of the Pilot.
Yeah.
Lannister beats Baratheon, right? I mean,
no,
I don't play either faction, but
I mean if
they can kneel your monsters, if they can kneel your Gregor and Tywin and Meereys, then it doesn't matter if you have all the economy in the world. You're
if Lannister gets Seal out, though, it's over.
I actually think Baratheon is strong against Lannister.
Hmm.
It's just
then I'm
It's just against a lot of the other, the rest of the field. I think Baratheon, particularly against Stark, can be pretty weak.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, but there wasn't much Stark at Gen Con.
No, there wasn't.
I mean,
really?
Compared to what I expected, I was expecting like maybe 50% Lannister, 40% Stark, and then 10% everything else.
What was
else.
Dominating the field?
Lannister.
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 Yeah.
I would not be surprised if it was like 70% Lannister. I think.
No, I don't think it was that high. I definitely don't think it was that high. But it
in
was,
terms of banners and main houses, I think
oh,
that
it,
Lannister was
Lannister
in 70%
of
decks.
Of, yeah,
I would imagine. I think like half of the graduated cut had Lannister cards in, or was Lannister main house. I think it was like 24 or 48 or something like that was Lannister, and then taking into account how many had banners of the Lions, I didn't know that, but it was a fuck ton of Lannister.
I think
Gen
there were
Con.
Four decks that had Lannister cards, four that didn't, because there was. Two or there's my Stark, there's the Baratheon, there was a Martell Wolf, then there was the Lanny Dragon, Lanny Wolf, and then I can't remember what the last three were.
Lanny's son was in there somewhere.
There was Lanny's son.
Yeah.
There's a Martell Fealty. So yeah, there were at least four decks that weren't running any Lannister cards.
Yeah.
And then the other four were.
Yeah.
So
about 50%, and that's yeah. That's how it was with the graduated cut. About 50% of them were Lannister decks, but yeah, I'm not going to talk about that. For
well, speaking of houses that aren't getting much love, is anything happening with Tyrell at this point?
I've actually heard people say that Tyrell's good now.
I'm not saying that they're bad. I'm just asking.
I'm actually getting really excited about Tyrell. I think the Knights of Summer does wonders for him. I think that they can now run a summer deck. And just overwhelm with renown.
Oh, yeah.
Bitterbridge is actually something that can be useful.
Oh, I love Bitterbridge when it's played against me.
Just never play it. Never key it first turn.
Well, I think the Tyrell deck now has to run Varys because
yes.
For me, my approach with Tyrell Summer, at least, is to run Bitterbridge, run the Arbor, entice them into overcommitting with Bitterbridge, and then make sure that you can get your Varys off. Once you get your Varys off, then you can use your superior draw power
sure.
and Bitterbridge and the Arbor in order to reestablish board dominance. And then you can run all your knights that have renown, and since it's a summer deck, you're probably running tourney for
the king.
And then you can just push for the win that way.
Yeah.
I think there's a strong deck there. I don't know exactly what components go into it, but I think it's fairly solid.
And especially with Brienne of Tarth coming out, I think Tyrell is going to be setting itself up.
That card is absolutely hideous, by the way.
Well, she's supposed
she's
to
supposed
be.
To be
I know she is.
That's kind of the point.
Congratulations to whoever did the art. You did a wonderful job.
But I mean, it's
like
90%
of her personality,
right? Stark Banner House at this point. Right. And if everyone who's not familiar, Brianna Tarth, 5 cost, military power, 5 strength. She's a lady with renown. While you control a king character or Catelyn Stark, Brianna Tarth does not kneel when declared as a defender. And so one thing that I really like about this, it's not just the Marjorie suite anymore or... I mean, Tyrell is now establishing itself as just a solid house both ways around, and I'm excited about it. But
yeah.
The new lady they're getting is pretty good too. 4 cost, 3 strength,
Allery turn.
Power,
yeah.
Intrigue. Search the top 10 cards of your deck when you play her for
yeah.
a character. Put it in your hand.
For a character, 3 or lower.
Yeah, 3
Which
or lower. But tutor's always good
for Elena's informant. Is a great combo.
Oh yeah, it's good.
Add it to your hand. It's not.
Add it to your hand so you can grab your Elena's informant, flop her down.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that Tyrell is paired really well with Martell. Either main house, Tyrell,
I think
Banner,
either
son,
way
it
works
do
well.
It either way.
Yeah.
I think JC Wemma is doing that Tyrell son, and he
yeah.
well, he was hiding it leading up to Gen Con, and then he flopped on it, but he went like 2-4.
Yeah.
But he I played him, and we went 1-1 against you, so it's a good deck.
Is Martell getting a king character that we know of?
No, they're not.
They're not.
I think
Martell and Night's Watch are not getting kings.
But I think they're both getting attachments that give the king.
They might. Okay. I don't know.
I believe in the article they said that.
They did say something like that. Yeah,
I think that they're getting... I think every house is going to be getting an attachment that gives kings. Plus, you could run the king beyond the wall.
That is true.
That's only for wildlings, though, right?
Yeah, it's only for wildlings, but they're all neutral.
Yeah.
Mance Raider. I mean, he's good.
Yeah. Well, he's already a king.
Yeah, he's a king.
Oh, that's right. He is a king.
Yeah. So, all right.
I mean, we could talk about spoilers for the next few hours.
Well, there's so many. But, you know, honestly, we want to save some for the next podcast.
That sounds good.
So with that, I think we've talked enough.
Wait, there's one more card I want to talk about quick. It's a 2-cost, 2-strength companion card.
Oh,
wait, what is this? What is it called?
Mickey?
Hot Pie.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking Hot Pie. Does anyone run?
Actually, I don't want to talk about him.
He is pretty fucking amazing. But non-limited economy.
Yeah, I'm just not even going to bother anymore. Is that what you do with bullies? You know, you don't engage them. Hopefully stop eventually.
Oh, Mickey's being bullied now.
I'm being bullied.
All right. Well, with that, thanks for listening, everybody. Danny?
I'll just do 2 quick jokes.
2 quick jokes.
What do you call a Dothraki riding on a squid?
I don't fucking know.
Calamari. What do you call a mathematician Dothraki?
Calculator.
Calculator.
All right. And with that ends the podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.